Sometimes you need to give up. I have looked like the person that has nothing going for them. I went for a very long time. I stayed in that dark place of just self-hate, shame, guilt. Sometimes you need to like take your hands off the control and the anxiety and like get out of the car, take a breather.
What would you say is the most important first step to take if they were to want to manifest more of what they wanted into their life?
A lot of times we're trying to manifest out of inauthentic desires, things that we think we're supposed to want, or things that the society says is like, you're supposed to have a Gucci bag, you're supposed to drive this car. Realize that my fear is what's keeping me from my manifestation. I really think that manifestation is a process of expansion. People think they're supposed to be manifesting year round. No, it's like a flower. You don't bloom year round. You're not supposed to be manifesting all the time. And all of that gave me enough strength and courage to be like, fuck it. So let's just go for it. Even if you have this kind of wisdom that the journey does not end, you don't get to a certain place where you're like, all right, done. Now I'm a perfect bitch. You start to notice the changes that are happening or the little like hints that the universe is telling you you're on the right path. This is what manifestation is.
Alia Lovely, welcome to the Ginny Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you.
When you told me your name was Alia, my first introduction to Alia was in my early 20s. It was a little lesbian bar in Melbourne, Australia that we used to go to on Thursdays. I don't think you're named after that lesbian bar, no. Just to clarify.
I think I was born before the lesbian bar, yeah.
You never know. I just wanted to clarify that off the bat. What I love about this conversation we're about to have is this topic of manifestation, because there's different teachings, different flavors about how to manifest, how we can be present to manifest more. But I want to start with just like my journey from Alia Bar in Melbourne to where I am now in New York. I want to hear about your personal journey, Alia. Can you share your personal journey with manifestation and what led you to really explore this practice?
So when I was younger, my mom, unbeknownst to her, was teaching us manifestation. You know, I grew up a really religious Christian background, and she would kind of tell us, if you pray for it because you're a child of God, like God will give it to you. You just have to wait. And she would do this thing where she would talk about favor. Because you're a child of God, you have favor, would tell us to expect differently than what we saw on the outside. And since I grew up in a minority in a white school and things like that. And it's like, even though it seemed out of our reach, she'd be like, no, like you have favor. Like, so you should expect it. She didn't know that she was giving that to me at the time, but it was in the foundational building blocks of me thinking and deciding that, no, I should have that, or I should try that, or nothing being very much out of my reach. My father, additionally, he was always very good about being very positive. We'd almost get in trouble for saying we couldn't do something. Luckily grew up without thinking that I couldn't do things or couldn't have certain things. And growing up super poor, you know, it was just kind of like these little magic instances of exceptions when things would happen for us that would be really surprising. Like, for instance, I wanted to get into this really expensive college, private school. I was like, there's no way that we can afford the school, you know, not unless I get a lot of financial aid or, you know, something else. I had really, really good grades. I was a very good student, but I'm dyslexic and we didn't know at the time. Really difficult time taking tests. And so I would always get a really low score. So I go in and they're like, we don't accept anyone below a 25 ACT and blah, blah, blah. And my mom's like, just keep, you know, the faith alive. And I got stung by a bee in the orientation at this school. I'm allergic to bees. And so there was the swelling and the anaphylactic response, and they had to stop their orientation to like get me out of there, get a paramedic and whatever. So I'm sitting in the back of this admissions office with all of the admissions counselors paying all this attention to just me. And they really liked me. And they were like, you really want to go to this school? And I had two admissions counselors that were like, we're going to help you get into this school. I just experienced a lot of that magic, a lot of my life, because I had the idea that I believed that it would happen. And so me later, you know, obviously like writing this book, and I don't think law of attraction is a law. I think it's a principle that we can look at where we're starting from is all different places. Like, we are all born in different intersectionalities of identity, privilege, marginalized communities, et cetera. And so we don't necessarily have the same access as someone of privilege, or, you know, there are privileges that I have as a person of color and or not as a person of color, et cetera. But being able to see where you're starting from and know why you're asking for the thing that you're asking for gives us a greater chance of being able to accomplish and or have that thing.
It sounds like there were three key things that played out here. One was the belief in favor, then there was faith, and then trust. For someone who is just starting out or being introduced to manifestation, what would you say is the most important first step to take if they were to want to manifest more of what they wanted into their life?
So the first thing is to determine your maxims. Your maxims are your values in life, the things that are important to you, because a lot of times we're trying to manifest out of inauthentic desires, things that we think we're supposed to want, or things that the society says is like, you're supposed to have a Gucci bag, you're supposed to drive this car, you're supposed to be a doctor. Us really kind of dictating and determining like what our true desires are. And that requires us knowing ourselves. Determine your five maxims. What are the top five things that you know that you need to live a good life? Like, for me, at the time, it was, you know, time spent with my family members, having a romantic, loving relationship, being able to travel and have passions achieved, and financial security. And so those were my top five things. And so since time with my family was the tip-top thing and financial security was the fifth thing, the job opportunities that I might have been getting at the time weren't working out. And I was like, oh, why am I not able to manifest better money or like bigger jobs or bigger guests or whatever the thing was? And it was like, well, my top maxim is time with my family. And that's important to me right now. I was a new mom and wanting to be very present with my child's upbringing, especially in her formative first years. So it was like being able to acknowledge like, this is actually a higher priority for me. And I am manifesting that currently right now. And that's very, very special. So I shouldn't shit myself about not being able to manifest these higher jobs when I have a higher maxim currently occupying my mind. I think a lot of times people think they're supposed to be manifesting year round. And it's like, no, it's like a flower. Like, you don't bloom year round. You're not supposed to be manifesting all the time. Unfortunately, capitalistic society would tell you the opposite. Like, you're supposed to be doing something. Keep going, keep going. You live in New York. I used to live in New York. The energy of like, what are you doing now? What's going on now? Like, are you hired now? Okay, what are you going to do next? It's obsessive. And it makes us feel like we're less than if we're not doing something. And we don't observe those time periods of seasons of rest that are necessary in order to continue to manifest. So I think like the first thing is like being able to determine what's important to you, being able to kind of really take hold and say, these are the things that matter most to me above anything else. And that helps you then create a list of what you'd actually like to manifest, not what you think you're supposed to.
I love that you talked about rest and the seasons, but especially the grounding energy that you're talking about manifestation, because it's not that you have to manifest all year round. It's what your five maxims are in this moment right now. And I think when that continually shifts, you're giving the universe the principle of attraction, mixed messages, right? So if you're like, yeah, I want this today, I want time with my family today, and tomorrow I want money, it's like, yo, what do you want me to do here? I'm not sure what you want me to give you. So that clarity is super important in your maxims. I love that you mentioned that as a first entry point into manifestation too. What do you believe is the most effective manifestation practice?
Well, Jenny, I'm glad you asked.
yeah, that was my little segue. See what I did there?
I happen to have something called the Imagine Method. If you are listening to this and not watching this, I've just took my book out. So the Imagine Method are the seven steps that I guide people through. And it's an acronym for inception. You know, where are you starting from? Being able to acknowledge where you're at in your life. Like, I'm a new mom and I have a new business. I have this, I have that. And not comparing where anybody else is at, but just being able to acknowledge and accept where you're at and where you're starting from, because we do not live in a fair world. It's like being able to say, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm acknowledging I'm at. This is what I've been through. This is what I've had to go through. These are my narratives. This is my trauma. These are my triggers. Having to do some of that self-work is really important to the beginning stages of learning how to manifest, because a lot of times people will find themselves trying to manifest something that's 4 years ahead of their time, or 4 years ahead of their wisdom, or 4 years ahead of their work. And they're like, well, it doesn't work for me. And it's like, okay, well, you can also be living in a war-torn country when shit's really going down and you don't even have your basic needs met at that point. So it'd be very difficult to even think about manifestation in that space, right? So being able to acknowledge where you're starting from gives you at least a foundation to give you off a jump off point to say, okay, I'm not necessarily in a place to manifest. I'm in a place of rest. I'm in a place of recovery. I'm in a place of reflection instead of in a place of doing, because manifesting is an action-based thing. So like, what do you want? Like, try to figure out what you want. But a lot of people don't actually know what they want, which is why the maximum process is important, because I think sometimes we're waiting for someone to tell us what we want or who we're supposed to be. And being able to define that for ourselves is really empowering, because it's like, oh, wait, actually, I do not want a giant mansion and a yacht. I do not want to wear these clothes or do these things or have this type of job. And you could start to ask yourself who you are. It is a very deep discovery process. So then you have the A, which is anti-belief. Now, to me, this is an incredibly important part of the step, because it's like, I want this thing, but I can't have it because. Why can't I have it? I can't have it because of systemic racism. I can't have it because I live in a war-torn country. I can't have it because I have negative beliefs about myself or limiting beliefs about myself. I can't have it because I have illness. I can't have it because I just am like too attached to my story. So there are very real reasons why you might not be able to have something, but there are also very false reasons why you might not be able to have something or might not be able to have something right now. So say it's a partner you're trying to generate, and that depends on another person. They have to also be in the right part of their life. And so I have some clients that I work with where they're like, they're never coming. I'll never have it. I never can be good enough for. And I'm like, wait. What if the perfect person for you isn't ready yet? What if they're still going through their shit, but they're perfect for you? If you knew in 4 years, you would be with the perfect person for you, and y'all would settle off into the sunset for 40 years. If you could just wait in that time period, would you be okay with that? Is it a timing thing, or is it a narrative thing? So we look at those beliefs, those anti-beliefs, I can't have that, and try to evaluate, is that the truth or is that the story I'm telling myself? And then you go into growth, which is like, how do you apply that principle? What changes need to happen in your life in order to do that? I have a very important story around this one. I have always struggled with my weight since college. So when I was in college, I was kidnapped and sexually assaulted. In that experience, and in my head, I'm like, it could have gone so much worse than it did, but it was enough to change how I felt about myself and my safety. And so I put on a lot of weight. And in that space, I continued to tell myself, you're lazy, you're disgusting, why can't you lose this weight? And whatever, as I got older and older and older, just forgetting about disassociating with that experience. But my top maxim to my body was safety. And because I had grown up with those narratives of like, you're tempting men with your boobs. And I'm like, I'm 12. Like, I don't know nothing about boobs. They just happen to come out of my body. That my body was problematic. So I make my body unattractive to society anyway, in order to stay safe. So when I'm trying to then lose weight or do something with my weight, I will always find a way to sabotage, because my top maxim is safety, not weight loss. And it didn't come to me actually until I was writing this book, where I was really starting to process out and remember some of those memories. I couldn't even remember his face until then. It'd been 30 years. And I was sitting there and I wrote out the comment, I am more afraid of men than I am death by bad health. I'm more afraid of men than I am of death due to bad health. That statement gave me my power back. Because in that moment, I realized that my fear is what's keeping me from my manifestation. My need for safety is higher than my need for a banging bod, right? Then suddenly I just sobbed. I like all this forgiveness that I had for that girl, for her. Like, she just was doing the best she could to cope with what happened to her. And being able to be in that space, whew, the growth. Just the growth of being like, I understand now why when I get to a certain tipping point, I quit. Why when I like get up, I it's like suddenly the battery that I had to do all these things was gone. And starting to rework and rewire that relationship with myself, which then leads us into the next step, which is integration. So it's the process of playing with that back and forth of like, all right, I'm in this growth point. Oh, I failed again. It's okay. How can I give myself grace through this process of what it is that I'm trying to manifest? Maybe it's a business. It's a relationship. It's like your weight journey or eating healthy, whatever. That grace that's necessary in the integration process, it doesn't stop You don't learn it one time, you get over the hurdle and you're done. Like, learning is never linear. It's always cyclical. It comes back and say, hi, me again. Did you learn that? We're going to go deeper this time, you know? So being able to give yourself grace through that process. And then that next step is N, which is noticing. And noticing is so important because it gives us that little dopamine hit, that boost of like, all right, our spirit guides are here. I keep seeing these goddamn angel numbers again. You know, you start to notice the changes that are happening, or the little like hints that the universe is telling you you're on the right path. We got you. This is on its way. I remember when I was trying to manifest a partner, I was in Bali and I was doing some like deep shadow work. Everybody doesn't need to go to Bali. I just happened to go to Bali.
But it's not a pray love thing. It's no, just.
It was. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. So I felt the draw there. And so I went there and I was in Shavasana, in this space of just like, why can't I meet somebody? Like, why is it taking me so long? Why is it so hard? And I got this memory of me being like 9, 10 years old and my parents telling me I couldn't do gymnastics anymore. We were super poor. And I remember my dad telling me, because I got a C in math, and them saying, oh, well, you can't do gymnastics. I was like, that was never the agreement. There was no contingency here. And me knowing intuitively that I was like, this is because you can't afford it. Now it was just an easy way to blame it on me, to make it my fault, why we can't do this. So I had determined then, and perhaps an overreaction, that I must do everything by myself. And that made me very hypervigilant, very independent. I won't accept anyone's help or ask for anyone's help because I don't want someone to be able to take it away from me. I want to be able to do it on my own. And that level of like hypervigilance meant that there's no space for anyone else in my life. So I saw that all in that like 2 minutes. And I was like, holy cow. Okay, well, I'm ready. I'm ready to ask for an equal and capable partner. I'm ready for that to open up to me. And I met my husband 4 months later. It was bananas how quick that happened. And that leads us into expansion. And I really think that manifestation is a process of expansion, a process of us discovering who we are as people. And then we start that process all over again. But a lot of times people get what they want and they don't find that they're happy. They get what they want and then they're like, sweet. And then it's like cool for like 5 minutes and then they're on to the next thing. And it's like, what happens once we get what we want? We've expanded, we've grown. So now that process starts all over again. We are living in a beautiful, incredible house that I manifested. I used to drive by this house every day on my way to work. And when me and my husband decided we were going to buy a house, I was pregnant. And the house that we were going to buy, the sewage line broke or something. And we had to pull out of the deal. But I had had a dream before then that we had had a house with a red roof. So the day that that house had the sewage breakage and we backed out of that house, this house came on the market. I opened it up. It had a red roof. So we came here and there was a man who was living there. And so we met him and talked to him and it was really, really nice. We had our kids with us and it was so cool because even though we gave them a modest offer and they started getting loads of offers above asking price, he was like, I want that family to have it. And they chose us. And I was like, this is what manifestation is, right? We get into this house. I absolutely love this house, but me and this house have had some expansion points where it's like, this house is too big. It's a lot to maintain. So whenever we decide to buy a new house, there will be a very different list that I will approach with because I've expanded now. And now I know that I do not like a lot of stairs and I do not like cleaning up old houses that never look clean in certain areas. There are just ways in which we expand where we figure out more about who we are. And I think that that's the whole manifestation process.
Going through trauma myself, I understand the shame that comes with it. I understand that it can really impact how we see safety, also how we feel about love. How did you go through what you did with the shaming that you experienced? Because it's not easy to pull yourself out of that and into this higher state, because when you've been to those dark places, it can be challenging to move out of them. So I'd love to know, what did you do to get to a higher vibration?
I think that I went for a very long time. I stayed in that dark place, like of just self-hate, shame, guilt, you know, just feeling like, what did I do? Like, what, I should have been smarter. I should have done something different. And it just turned into a life of self-hate. I think that like when I started my awakening journey, this process of like, what does it mean to come back to self? What does it mean to love myself? And that has not been an easy journey. You know, like I have learned how to love myself through what I give to the world, And that has helped me start to raise where I'm at, but then starting to understand that I'm not just as valuable as what I have to offer the world. I'm also innately valuable. And that have been still been a struggle. Okay, you know, I have this like incredible husband who just doting on me all the time. Oh, you're so beautiful. You're this and that. And I'm like, I don't even know how to take it, you know, because it's just, it's so jarring and so far from the way I feel about myself. And so that's something I'm still very actively working on. So I think it's important that people know that even if you have this kind of wisdom, that the journey does not end. You don't get to a certain place where you're like, all right, done. Now I'm a perfect bitch and I know everything. It's not like that at all. Real talk. But I will say that the process of deepening my relationship and self-love with myself has opened my intuition. And the louder my intuition has gotten, the easier it's gotten. I'm in the process of learning how powerful I am. I'm learning right now about money and worthiness and how much I feel like I can pull in versus not pull in and what that means to me. So I was obsessed with this table, like just absolutely obsessed with this table. Really, really wanted this table. It's a marble table. It's gorgeous. It's a $3,000 table. You could buy a car. That is a 2 months over my mortgage. Like, you know, just thinking that this is an obscene amount of money to spend on this thing. There's no way in hell I would buy this. No, I'm not going to do it. That's ridiculous. Talk myself out of it. I'd probably gone back and forth for about 4 weeks, continuing to do this process of looking at it. Oh, I really want it. Trying to find something else, trying to find something cheaper. Facebook Marketplace. Maybe we go to Chicago. We can get this vintage one. No. Coming to the place where I'm like, this is really consuming a lot of my time. So I have this talk with a girl named Sarah Walton. She was on my podcast. Very, very knowledgeable about money and things like that. Her talking about worthiness and the things that we're willing to ask for, what we feel worthy of asking for. And I think sometimes a lot of us really struggle with that process of being able to even ask for the thing that we want, because either one, our parents never said we couldn't afford it or we couldn't have it, or that's stupid to spend your money on, or you'll never have a relationship like that, or whatever the thing is. What does it mean to blow past that narrative, even with the stupid stuff? So I go back, I get ready to do this whole process of, I know I'm not going to buy the table. I go to look on it. I dream, I imagine, maybe I will do this. I won't do this. The drama. And because I was on my phone and I hit pay now to see what the adjusted payments would be, it just bought the table. It was clicked onto my shop app, which has my credit card on it. And I was like, immediate panic attack. I'm going to throw up because I don't want to spend that amount of money. And I sit there and I can hear my guides, my intuition, whatever you want to call it, say, this is what scarcity feels like somatically. This is what scarcity feels like in your body. This is what scarcity feels like. Feel it. Sit with that uncomfortable feeling of this right here is telling you that money is finite. Money does not exist except in where you can see it, that you are not powerful, that you couldn't make this back in 24 hours, all the things. I'm very thrifty with my money, but you don't think you deserve the nice one. You always go secondhand and you always end up replacing it because it's not the thing you actually wanted. Me going back and forth and saying, this is so stupid. Why am I having to learn this lesson through a table? Like, that sounds dumb, but them saying, look, feel how it feels in your body. Feel what that feels like. And like, you are not powerless here. You can make that money back in 48 hours. And me being like, can I do that? Is that possible? I haven't done it before. Let's try it. So I get my spell book out, write some spells. I start saying the spells over and over and over. I start feeling real fucking powerful. I'm not joking. Within 24 hours, that money was back in my account. Went 3 minutes shy of the time period from when I bought that table, that money was back in my account. And I'm going, this right here. So then my spirit guides were saying, every single time now you walk by that table, every single time you remember how scarcity feels in your body and how powerful you are. I've been wanting a book deal for 15 years. I've written 3 books in total. And someone came into my inbox. Someone from Hay House had caught my podcast and said, would you like to collaborate on a book? And that was it. But if I hadn't written the first book and had it flop tremendously, waste $14,000, write a second book that I wrote because it was a book I needed to read that helped me heal, but didn't do, maybe sold 100 copies. If I didn't do that work first and building that, this, I don't think would have happened. But sometimes we're just like, we're not in a space where we're ready to wait.
So that's one of the limiting beliefs I would say that people have when trying to manifest their desires, right? They're like, well, I've done all of this stuff, and they kind of get to the point where they give up. Do you have any tools of how to overcome that when you hit that ceiling of, I'd done everything you told me to, Alia. I imagined. I'm here.
I think staying open is really the biggest thing, because like sometimes you need to give up. Sometimes you need to like take your hands off the control and the anxiety and like get out of the car, take a breather, you know? And I don't mean give up. Like sometimes I think the idea of giving up is different because it comes with defeat. I would say taking a break is probably the better way to say that, because like I didn't pursue another book situation for 4 or 5 years. And I was like, I know I have a book in me. I have like 5, 6, 10 books in me. But like until then, like I'm going to work on this instead or whatever. And actually, it makes sense why this would have been the perfect time, not when it happened beforehand. Like, I don't even want anybody to look up my other books now. I'm like, ooh, shit writing. So it takes those failures sometimes to be able to learn more about what we do want. And I don't know, we live in such a microwave culture. It's difficult sometimes to be like, it's going to take time. I have looked like the person that has nothing going for them. And all of that gave me enough strength and courage to be like, fuck it. I ain't going to lose. So let's just go for it. You know, like I think that because I've been outside of my comfort zone enough, then it was like all of those things kind of came into play because I was willing to risk it all. And I think sometimes it's difficult for when we're worried about what we're going to lose, that we're not willing to risk what we have for what we want.
Alia, thanks for being on The Ginny Show. And thank you for joining me today. Your time and attention is something I am so grateful for. This podcast is a production of Ginny Media. If you had fun, please subscribe and leave us a review. I'm Ginny Sarasvati. We'll see you next time. And go out there and manifest something wonderful. You deserve it.